about any of that? Did we talk about that? The question was, would I remind you of what was going on with this guy's heart and why it was enlarged? And we decided that his arterial blood pressure in the aorta was 168 over 120, which was a considerable workload. So the heart muscle was exercising a lot, and as a result of that, his heart, it is, I guess you guys call it, an answer, locked up. The hypertrophy is a large heart shatter that we saw in the x-ray that was more than likely related to increased muscle mass, not the serious increased ventricular volume. That on the x-rays would it look different if it was from volume than from an increased muscle mass, and no it wouldn't. And why is that? Because the density of the muscle is the density of water, and the density of the blood is the density of water. So you get the same kind of imaging with the x-ray. Now there are other kinds of imaging techniques where you can take the temple, but I'm not in it. All right. No more questions about that, huh? Go dog.
We went with one yesterday, playing in the first game. We only had the most game of about 33 points. Trying to help avoid the state's two stars, bro.
Women play defense.
I'm sorry.
Got carried away.
So, in a normal person, if you were to use a sphygmomanometer and do a blood pressure on the arm and a blood pressure on the thigh, would they turn out totally even, or does the extra pressure be able to compress the femoral arteries? Is that going to change the blood pressure they receive?
How easy it is to compress the thigh, you'd be able to get it more enough to stop flow and get your arteries and legs. But it would be, if you could do that, then it would be slightly less. If I put a catheter in for the aorta, the root of the aorta, and I measure the pressure there, and then I pull it down into the femoral artery, you see a couple millimeters difference.
But not.
So the resistance is offered by that vasculature is not very big. And you're asking really another question.
Yeah.
If I put a blood pressure cuff on there, would I be able to compress? Would I have a cuff large enough to compress? Would I be able to generate enough pressure to compress against all that muscle mass? If I could, I would end up seeing close to the same.
Are we
going to
go more on blood pressure than terminology. And what we said was
if we talk about systole and diastole, we're defining systole as ventricular contraction. We're defining diastole as ventricular relaxation. But when we talk about systolic arterial pressure, diastolic arterial pressure, we really don't have a hell of a lot to do with the ventricles doing, because that valve is there. So what does all that mean? Well, that means that really if we look at our arterial systolic arterial pressure. It's this pressure right here. It's the high valve. And diastolic arterial pressure is the low valve. And so that's about all we need to know about systolic and diastolic pressure in terms of the arteries, is what those terms relate to when we're talking about pressure. The lowest one that you get right here, okay? The highest one that you get right there. Both of those occur during systole event, ventricular systole. You could say, oh, you know what? This one, the highest one that I get there is just as the ventricle starts to relax. So you could argue that is measured during diastole, and this is measured during systole in the ventricle. So the confusion comes about just because of a convention that we've chosen, somebody has chosen, to call the top pressure systolic on pressure diastolic.
So as soon as you stop hearing, like as soon as the blood's going too freely, that's the point at which you have the lowest pressure and you stop measuring. Like I was confused as to what you're
actually. Oh, so now you're talking about the cuff.
Yeah.
Okay, you remember, we're going to use the cuff. We've got a bunch of cuffs and says we got cuffs and stethoscopes downstairs. You remember what we did was we closed off this artery. And we slowly let the pressure off the cuff. And when we got to a point where the blood pressure was enough to overcome the pressure of the cuff, then you got a little spurt through. You got a little spurt through, you heard it. And so we started right here, and as we continued to let the pressure off, we got a little spurt through, and then a spurt through, and then a spurt through, and then a spurt through. But then the blood pressure was greater than the cuff pressure all the time. And so we didn't hear any spurts through, there was just a flow through there, and we wouldn't hear that. Okay, so what I'm really measuring is the pressure when the cuff pressure, or when the arterial blood pressure just overcomes the cuff pressure, and I keep measuring that, and I stop my measurement when the cuff pressure is below the pressures in the artery. Okay? Good? Next guy. have a 27-year-old unemployed male who appeared at the clinic complaining of throbbing headache. His blood pressure was 184/52, his blood was pulse rate was 70 beats per minute, and chest examination demonstrated enlarged heart. So here we have another enlarged heart. He has throbbing headaches. His blood pressure was 184/52.
So his systolic looks like it's too high and his diastolic looks like it's too low.
Left ventricle had a lot of fluid. Heart was pumping harder, maybe more fluid than normal. That would create a lot of pressure, I suppose. Yes, and shooting into the art. The aorta or the artery?
The aorta. So now translate what you said to something that's relevant to the aorta.
All this volume is going from the left ventricle and been shoved into the aorta. The aorta's like, whoa, I've got a lot of stuff pushing on me from the left ventricle, like more than usual. I suppose that could cause it.
Could you hear that with a stethoscope? Could you hear the artery saying, whoa?
Maybe.
So, really, could you say, let's take this apart a little bit. Could you say, from that value of 184, could you say that the ventricle was putting on a lot of volume?
Not necessarily.
Why not? So by knowing that the blood pressure in that vessel is 184, all you really know is the volume, all you really expect is that the volume in that location is higher than what you expect it to be. So you don't know, you have two options. One option is that the resistance downstream is really, really high, and the amount of volume coming in is the usual amount, except that the added volume in the vessel is high now because it's taking a long time going out. Or, what you said was the case, that there's a lot of volume coming in. Kelly said, whoa there! She said, you don't really know that there's a lot of volume coming in. All you really know is there's a lot of volume in there. So the
other thing that could be happening from that picture is that there could be a lot of resistance downstream. And not all volume is needed.
Okay, someone with a large heart do all of the time for a proportional to how large it is, or do something in space?
Depends on why it's in large. What we saw with the previous patient was that the left ventricular wall was thicker, and so the heart shadow would be bigger. If the person has a right heart issue, the right heart could get bigger and the left ventricle, the left heart kind of changed like that. Or you could have something just with the left ventricle.
What does the systole and diastole describe again? I mean, I know what it describes in terms of measuring the pressure in the cuff, but what is it in terms of like the ventricle and the movement of blood in the heart itself?
In the terms that we've used in that problem, it doesn't tell you anything about the heart. It tells you that the highest pressure in that artery was 184, and the lowest pressure was 52.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with ventricles. And
that's right. The hypothesis is that if there is a narrowed valve and the ventricle is pushing out a lot of volume to that valve, then there's going to be a longer time between that beat and the next beat because it took longer to pump that blood out.
That was the whole signal production.
isn't the whole single conduction thingy?
I didn't
I did. Isn't the whole single conduction thingy related to the rate of the heartbeat? Yeah. So, it was still contracted the next time. So, the question that Katie had again was, how come, what does that 52 in here suggest about the vascular system? Because remember now, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good at this point to try to decide what's going on in the heart if, in fact, our reporter is standing in the artery. We can't see really what's in the heart. So what does the 52 suggest to you?
I have a question, and maybe it's going back a little bit, but I don't understand why the two things we're looking at is either the valve or the amount of volume going in. I think arterial compliance, like maybe it's the less compliant artery, if you're having pressure too, or why are those two things?
Question was, wait a minute. Said that, gee, the volume seems high, and that's why the pressure is high. But wasn't compliance also a major contributor to pressure? So if somehow that artery is not very compliant, wouldn't that also explain why the pressure is high? And wouldn't that also maybe contribute to why this pressure was low? That's a possibility. Well, according to the grass feature, that would maybe aptly describe what's happening. Except that I don't know that you would necessarily hear that sound.
Well, and it seems like, given the specifics of the case, like he had an injury.
But we don't know that.
Yeah, we do.
It says right there.
Well, we do if we read this.
Somewhere, but not necessarily in the artery, because it seems to me that the scar is somewhere in the groin. And we're talking about the aorta here.
What? Isn't there an artery that goes through there, which would then back up?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good point. That's a good point. So I have a question for you. If I put a tourniquet along my leg, and then I crank that sucker, how much do you think my blood pressure in the aorta is?
No.
A lot?
No.
Well, how does that pressure increase if it just makes the valve back towards the area that you think you're into anyways, then it might not be small.
So, what Adam is suggesting is that if I tie off this rod, this pad here, there are all these other paths that the blood can take to get to this side over here. So I really wouldn't see a whole lot of increase in pressure. She says, if I put that tourniquet on, I'm not only blocking flow going into the leg, I'm blocking flow returning from the leg. So I'm taking a volume out of the system. So what happens if I, in fact, put this little ping pong ball into the femoral artery and then I block that? Okay, so we had the argument that there's no difference, because if I don't have flow through here, I'm not going to have flow through there, so I'm still taking the same volume out.
How's that different from the last
one? My question is, so what I get back up here? The real question was, if I blocked off this artery, would I expect to see pressure increase upstream?
Yes.
Why?
Because there wouldn't be enough of, like, the flow wouldn't be going.
Because there's the same amount.
And so it would, the pressure would be increasing.
Where else is it? Where are they going to go?
What's going to happen if I take this path out? What's going to happen to the flow here? What's going to happen to the flow here?
Increase.
The amount of pressure increase that I would see is not very much because the flow can go all kinds of places.
So how is that different from the last patient that we looked at? If he had a blockage and then his increased.
How is it different from the last person? Because the last person's blockage is right here.
I am. Not a lot of cases.
Before all these things came on.
Okay.
This is one of those things that you guys might want to ask. Because it might be nice to know where those vessels come off. So is there very much that comes off of the thoracic aorta? Not really. Right? You got some brachial stuff, you got some carotid stuff, people thing, right? And then all that stuff jumps off down here. So that's the difference between that. But in this case, if I'm going to block this artery, I won't see a whole lot of pressure increase up there because there are many, many, many other paths that blood can take.
I think about the amount of time it's going to take for all the blood to get up these other paths that aren't usually never able to have circulation. Is it actually going to be pressure because they're all trying to reroute something else?
They're not trying to reroute anything. I increase the pressure upstream, I increase the driving force. I increase the driving force, I increase the flow. unless resistance changes,
my other question is: there's two different sounds. One during systolic contraction, and the other one during diastole. So, what is the second sound?
You mean in this patient?
Yeah. Maybe I'm making it up. This has a high pitched sound, systolic murmur, and an accentuated second sound.
I see. If we look back. Let's look this back and see where we where does the second heart sound occur? Here's the first heart sound. Where does the second heart sound occur? Right here it says one. Where does the second heart sound occur? When which valve shuts?
The aortic valve.
The aortic valve shuts. Oh, and when are you hearing this systolic murmur? Right here during this piece. And then you hear an accentuated second heart sound when that valve slams shut. So it's really the same time.
So accentuated, is that more than?
Louder. That means louder.
Okay.
In this case.
It could be when it says that it's a strong thrill.
Oh, well, we're not there yet. So, can we go back? Yep. Not yet. Could be a lot of turbulence through the valve. It doesn't say that the valve is narrow necessarily. So let's go back for a moment. Let's see what our possibilities are. Okay. We said that arterial pressure was 184. What we concluded from there, we hypothesized from that, was that we're looking at this point in time, and that there appeared that we could explain that pressure
by one of three things. That either there was a high volume in there was a low compliance in that vessel, or there was a high resistance. And that was just at that point in time. What we saw then with this murmur was the suggestion that flow coming in here is very, very rapid. And flow coming in there being very, very rapid is probably more consistent with the increased volume than either of the other two. Then we went and said, what about 52? Katie was really interested in this low 52, and so why, how would you explain the possibility that there's a low diastolic volume, or a low diastolic pressure? Pardon?
I'm thinking there might be backflow, like the valve might not be sealing all the way, so that flows in both directions instead of just one direction, that's going to increase.
That's a possibility. Go ahead.
If there is a lot of volume more than normal, the flow out is still the same flow as as usual, but there's more volume, so there's a higher turbulence.
You're talking about
the exit. The
flow out here. Mm-hmm. So you say
same opening, but there's more volume.
So if you say the same opening, there's the same amount of resistance down here, and then there'd be more pressure here, so there's going to be more flow out. Is that right? That's okay. And you said something about turbulence.
Yeah, because if there's a higher volume, and the same size valve exiting.
Okay, but there's no valve here now.
Not valve, but
same resistance. And so, but we don't hear, we don't hear any heart sounds there. We don't hear the turbulence there necessarily. It's all, what we're talking about that we hear is we hear a systolic murmur, and we hear an accentuated, a lot of the valve closing. Okay?
Well, what Alex said, if you had enough backflow to reduce the pressure,
longer. Okay. react this way during diastole, during ventricular diastole? Did you hear something during diastole? Did they hear anything during diastole?
I didn't think so.
So there's no, remember when we looked at the patient who had an insufficiency in the aortic valve, we saw a lot of noise during the ventricular diastole, during the time the arterial pressure is going. In this case, we don't have any indication. Shandy said is similar to what Marlo was talking about, only not so much an intrinsic wall change, but if I have more volume coming in here, and wouldn't I have more recoil of the arterial wall, wouldn't I have a higher pressure in there, and wouldn't that higher pressure then cause more flow to go out to the periphery during the diastole? The answer is yes. What else would come if I... What else might cause a lot of flow to go out?
Oh, sorry. I don't know if I'm answering your question, okay. But I was looking back at the chart that we did on F42,
yep.
Where in the situation where if we lost our elasticity, I think that was the compliance decrease of our arterial compliance.
We lost elasticity. I don't know what that means.
I'm sorry. The elasticity. Never mind. Says indicate what would happen if the arterial compliance decreased.
Okay.
So then you have a really high systolic pressure, and then it drops immediately.
Right.
Getting at low.
That's what Marlo was asking about before.
Yeah. So I think that's also typical of what's happening here, which is so you have a really high pressure. Initially, it would shut the valves really, really fast, but then it would drop immediately.
Yeah. So there are those two possibilities. Those two possibilities, that either this is really non-compliant, but I think that if that was really non-compliant, you wouldn't hear any that much sound coming during systole, because there wouldn't necessarily be that much volume coming in.
Right.
Based on the sound, I would opt for the fact that there's a lot of volume coming in.
That is Would your pressure go up initially because you're trying to create more pressure to the heart, so working harder to create more pressure?
Well, that's interesting. So now here I have this internal bleeding. I say I have an internal bleeding, and that'll explain why this drops. And then where is that bleeding going? Where is the blood going? Outside the vasculature. And then if that volume is gone, how is the system going to magically get more volume in to increase the pressure?
It's not, but it might contract harder to create.
Sure, but might contract harder, but it doesn't have a lot of volume, it's not going to do a lot.
Yeah, we concluded that too when we were going over it, and we kind of thought that if you had that, you'd have some sort of edema or something, you'd see something palpable with the blood leaving the back.
Well, we're not going to think about the scar, I guess. Okay, so what's your explanation for why this volume is low? What happened in here? We're going to make the volume low. Where'd the volume go?
You got extra blood vessels.
Resistance is left. All right.
It's fine.
So now, what we've somewhat, maybe, sort of hypothesized, concluded, we haven't concluded anything, is that it looks like, from your hypothesis, that maybe there's a lot of volume coming in during systole, and there's a low resistance downstream to cause a lot of drainage from the aortic pre-diastole. And now Megan wants to move on to this throat. And on a Monday, before Thanksgiving, it's always good to have So let's see, what did you say about that?
Saturday.
like there's a lot of bulk of it.
But still.
Yeah, you definitely go for thrill if you're brewing.
I want to just chill.
Is it thrill, like a palpable vibration?
Yeah, you notice, yeah. It doesn't say.
Oh, yeah.
In completing the physical examination, the scar was known on the inner aspect of the thigh. And it doesn't say that palpation gave him a big thrill. It says that the person who was palpating noticed a strong thrill in the area of the scar. And so, what did you say that was?
I was happy.
Yeah, it was.
A palpable vibration.
A palpable vibration. Okay. Due to turbulence.
Okay. More specific.
He says that he thinks that's a palpable.
No, I didn't. I was asking a question.
Yeah, wait, you might be right. You're right.
Okay.
He calls an hypothesis that could have been due. Or that thrill means that there's a palpable vibration. And he hypothesizes that it could be due to turbulence of the fact that was the case.
So with that, is that
vision
that this thrill is, it would be kind of like the cup where there's some kind of pressure blockage when you see
not necessarily. It says that there's a large amount of flow through a small opening.
So why?
I don't know.
What if there was a small amount of flow and they just initially caused all this pressure, like the starting tubes build up in an area making the tube more narrow, and so initially you got this pressure.
Yeah, but then how would you drain all that blood out? Because the diastolic pressure is 52. On closer questioning, this guy finally admitted that the scar was the result of a gunshot wound. And the bullet had not lodged in the tissue, it kind of went through the leg, and he had been able to treat the wound with first aid measures, which means that he put on a bandage with compression probably, and it was okay. He had not sought medical assistance because he did not want to reveal the circumstances under which his girlfriend shot him. Or something. And so now we have to think about what this tells us, and we have to think about how we'd explain our hypothesis, or whether this would fit with our hypothesis, that there is a low downstream resistance coupled with a high cardiac output, or a high ventricular output. So, what do you know about this area? About this area that's on the inner aspect of the thigh, where the blood went through, great sap in the vein and femoral artery. And what about it? They're both in that area. All right. There's a nerve there, too. Okay? Why? How do I know that? Because there's always a vein, artery, nerve. It lies in vein together. We know it wasn't professionally treated. So what could have happened? Could have nicked what? One of the vessels?
Could the bullet have nicked
one of the vessels?
Could
or
could that scar tissue be
both of the vessels?
charge you much.
Well, if it was pushing on the artery or vein, then it would increase resistance. And then what might have happened? Let's say this artery and vein were both injured and got nicked, as it were. What if they fused?
Oh, that's cool.
Well, would they fuse? Could in repairing that artery, could that tissue cause what do they call those things?
Anastomosis.
An anastomosis between the femoral artery and the main saphenous vein.
I have no idea. But it's really cool.
I know that you can get injuries like that.
That'd be cool. The matter says that I can get injuries like that.
Blood pressure's here. Deep blood everywhere.
So let's go back and see if that picture would fit. So if that picture would fit, then
the pressure builds up really quickly because it immediately goes into the vibration
caused by turbulence.
That is correct.
Okay. So that, at least in this context, that's what the thrill is. So in the blues context, it's a whole different thing.
What do you mean by
going
downstream?
Downstream is from the point that I'm somewhere beyond. Well, that's what I mean. Down, and so from the point that I'm measuring, it's farther downstream. So in this case, if I'm measuring here, and the resistance anywhere along these paths is decreased significantly, I would call that a decreased downstream resistance. Downstream from where I am. So now, if in fact we said, oh, you know, there's certainly a lot of flow going to the leg. How do I know that there's a lot of flow going to his leg? No. How do I know there's a lot of blood flow going to his leg?
Because he's not.
Because
blood pressure's high.
Because there's a high.
How do I know there's a lot of flow going to his leg?
Maybe he has a headache.
It doesn't tell you it's inflamed.
How do I know?
They took the
blood. There's always a lot of blood that goes down there.
There's always a lot of it. So how do I know there's a lot of blood going down there?
Because he's not having any problems.
Because his leg is still alive. Does he complain about it being cold?
No.
It didn't say that.
Does he have any complaints?
He doesn't say it.
Then it doesn't
mean
there's no problem.
Winter. Okay. Yeah, he got shot
in
the summer.
He denies being cold.
Like that.
He says no. There's got a fair amount of flow. No. No. In one case, if he doesn't raise the issue, then he doesn't raise the issue. If he denies it, I ask, and he says, no, I don't care.
No judgment.
Okay. And then if we say that he's... put him on a polygraph and ask him again. So now what this implies is that there's a fair amount of flow going to that leg. But what would happen if there was a significant connection between this vessel and that vessel.
Wouldn't it do just that, though? Wouldn't it, because the flow is coming out into a greater surface area, it would decrease the diastolic pressure, but more blood would be coming back in because you would get blood from the arteries and the veins back into the heart.
So Bama says, wait a minute, now, if I had another path, it was a direct path between here and here, I'd still get flow down here to these capillaries, the leg arteries, but wouldn't I have a lot of this blood going from the arterial side to the venous side, which would cause this tube to drain quicker, which would cause this pressure to go down quicker, but then wouldn't I have a lot more blood coming back to the right side of the heart? And if I had a lot of blood coming back to the right side of the heart, what effect would that have? Oh, because I have a lot of blood going directly from here to here without going to the vein. Yeah, sure.
But isn't that blood that has been coming from the leg anyway? It's not more blood. That blood is, if you didn't have a
except that the timing would be very good. Because the path is very short. Pardon? The timing of that return would be good. Okay? And what would happen is, you see, what's this right here? We talk about that a lot. Yeah, but that's an arterial. And so that blood would be bypassing this higher resistance area. Actually returning, making a bigger contribution to this return. So what would happen in the heart then? You've increased ventricular pressure. How have you increased ventricular pressure? You've increased the filling pressure because you have a higher atrial pressure. You increase the filling pressure, which has increased the filling, ventricular filling, which has increased the strength and traction. And how has it done that?
Because
it gave a bigger preload, a better alignment of active myosin. And as a result of that, what happened?
Enlarged heart.
Oh, wait a minute. The enlarged heart is due to increased filling, okay? So now I've got an increased filling, I've got a better alignment. We're assuming it's not pushed out too far. And now he's got a larger force of contraction, which causes a larger... as large as cardiac output, but through what mechanism?
Stroke volume.
Sure.
And now we see, we've got evidence of a larger stroke volume because we heard that sound during systole. So what happened to this guy, in fact, was that he had that gunshot wound, he had an injury during healing.
No.
Oh, she's squealing. Okay. And so what happened was he actually has an anastomosis between a major artery and vein.
So I'm following that, and I'm just confused about why we're not seeing more other things going on in the leg then.
Because evidently there's enough blood flow that's being supplied to the leg.
So it's still less flow to the leg, but not enough to be causing the problem.
We don't really know how much blood flow is going to the leg.
But we do know
that there's an increased flow. And so we'll come back to this in a little while, because what we're going to see is if, in fact, there was decreased flow to the leg and the muscles locally did not get enough blood to get up oxygen, and didn't get enough nutrients, and they had too many waste products. So what would happen is the local arterioles would dilate, which would cause an increased flow to those muscles. And that increased flow would be in addition to whatever's going through that shunt. That's a left to right shunt that has mostly. And so you just have a bigger flow through all three.
Where are we getting that? It just seems like if we're getting more, greater volume going back up to the heart, that we can't stop the volume going down to the leg and more volume coming back. You're just creating more blood.
No, no, what you have here, what you end up here is with a very, you end up with a large cardiac output. Okay? And what we're saying is that because there doesn't seem to be a lot of problem with the leg, we're assuming that there's adequate flow to the leg. There's adequate flow to the leg with this large stroke volume, a large cardiac output. Then what you have is an additional amount of flow going around that's basically going from the left side to the right side of the circulation. Not doing a hell of a lot except adding to the volume that's being pumped up. So they go in and repair this guy and repair his anastomosis and his vasculature and he turned out to be okay.
Going to increase diastolic pressure. Expecting to have an increased.
Let's
take a break. For a while, it's a huge heart attack. Oh my god, this is like because it can flow more through that.
Like
I'm saying more than normal, so you'd expect your blood pressure to go down over time. That's fine. It's just a small fall. I mean, that time period still, like, it seems like it would still be hot. Big heart. Basically, you're going to get like a big heart and you're going to try to fly. You know, it's got to be high on the low heart. It's going to be, I mean, it's going to go down in the next few weeks after surgery. Well, it has to be higher. Higher than
probably.
Well, look. The diastolic is going to raise. Systolic is going to be high. His systolic is going to be higher than
his. Wait, initially after surgery.
After surgery.
Initially after surgery. Then you blood pressure will go even higher.
Not even higher than now, but it's going to be higher than something. It'll be more towards normal.
So basically, blood pressure will decrease after surgery.
The next couple weeks, you'd expect to decrease in your body.
We're at the store, and he's like, we need to bring like the most unhappiest people. Like, let's get
through. So I'm saying, if you were monitoring after surgery, you'd expect to see, you wouldn't want to see. Yeah, if it raised against your
body. And if you don't go more feeling, and diastole would go up.
That's fine.
Yes.
I would think if you're running or something, or cold feet or something.
Falling on the treadmill will make your heart.
There's more volume in the system, but when we talk about cardiac output, we're talking about volume per unit time running through or moving through the system. So we said that this was a reservoir, right? Which means that if this get bigger and smaller,
yeah.
How do you know that? So we can change the distribution of volume between this compartment and that compartment and still
having the same flow through it. So we see that the pulmonary circulation holds less volume than the systemic circulation because there are fewer vessels. But I remember way back when, like maybe 2 years ago, when I asked this multiple choice question, people told me that the pulmonary circulation has the same volume as the system. So I thought it might behoove us to point out the fact that that's not the case.
Blood.
and we increase the tone we made, what would happen to the molecule?
Squeeze up and down.
It would squeeze up.
Well, it would squeeze down because there's a valve.
Ah, so it wouldn't squeeze down because there's a valve. And then if it's squeezed up, what would happen to the right atrial pressure?
It
would go up. And what would happen then? It
would
go to the ventricle. What would happen then? What would happen? Larger contraction. Larger stroke volume. And then what would happen to the left atrium? More volume. What would that cause in the left ventricle? More pressure, more preload. What would that have caused to happen? Higher stroke volume. And then where would that volume end up? It would end up over here. And what would happen to pressure in the arterial side? Well, keep that in mind, because we're going to come back to that in a little bit. And so now we're going to think about these two compartments in that model, except we're going to deal with this lady here. 60-year-old woman, and there's a word in there. There's a word in there that maybe we should talk about. And that word is fibrillation. What goes with fibrillation? Alex says, because he knows all the words. Yes, Alex. Well, I don't know. They said you know these things.
It's, I guess, a contraction that's not organized. So the cells are contracting independently, not in order.
Contraction is not organized.
Is that right?
Is that right?
I don't want to remember it in my head.
I was impressed with
it.
That the atrium
is kind of it's fibrillating. The atrium is just kind of quivering, isn't it? Let's see it again. Notice the ventricle is still contracting, but the atrium is just kind of not, you can't see that very much. So this is not quite as regular, but it's still contracting and still pumping. There's arterial pressure. And what's changed here, what's changed is the rate, because now whatever happens to come to the AV node is going to get to go through. And when we talk about that, so here's arterial pressure. You see the arterial pressure, the ventricle is still pumping. What is the RR interval?
Rest and relaxation.
What is an R?
R.
What is an R? What does R mean? It's the peak of the QRS. What do you think is the P, the RR interval? It's from one heartbeat to the next heartbeat. And so if the RR interval increases, does the heart speed it up or slow it down?
Slow it down.
We'll talk much more about that later. Let's see what happens when the ventricle is fibrillated. And let's look at the difference between atrial fibrillation and ventricular fibrillation. Okay. So there's the ventricle. Ventricle, a little bit along. There's the atrium. There's the clamp. There's chest wall. So there's the stimulator. Is it pumping effectively?
No.
No. Are those cells depolarizing?
Yes.
Yes. Are they contracting?
No.
Yes.
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 But not all together.
But not all together. This is the
atrium.
EKG, and this is arterial pressure. It was zero, so you're not getting very much out.
Because it's not coordinated.
Let's see this again.
And does that kill the dog? I would think so.
There's lung. There's heart. There's atrium. There's ventricle. Now I can't do the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Tetanus.
See what happened? Blood pressure?
Yeah.
Zippo. Is this contracting?
Yes.
Yeah, it's contracting.
Yes. Okay, so now what we're going to do is... we're going to put a big electric charge across this guy. There's still being fibrillating. There's a paddle and a paddle.
All those spoons?
One paddle, two paddle, three paddle, four. Then one.
Oh, wow!
Okay? What's happened?
Stop the heart.
And now it goes again. Here goes. Here goes.
Now what?
They restarted it.
So tell me, how come it restarted? Did they restart it?
No.
No. How do you stop all the random actions?
Reset. Control, sleep.
What was that?
So if I put this huge voltage, or I put a big voltage across the heart at once, I depolarize all the cells at once. Okay? And then they're all recovered. So how come it starts over? Why did it start up? They didn't do anything to stimulate it to start up. Because there's still calcium there. So. The waste drug.
SA note.
AV note. AV note or the SA note?
Choose one.
SA. True. face paint yourselves, and yep. Which face paint?
Essay.
The essay note.
Very good. Okay, I'll get that one, okay?
Everything. Paddle depolarize the whole heart. The whole heart is in refractory then, but the spontaneous depolarization of the pacemaker spontaneously depolarizes, and when an action potential is generated in the SA node, then it starts propagating to the rest of the muscle, and you have a nice coordinated contraction. How does that happen? Well, generally, you see, what happened in this case is that they put an electrode, they started a depolarization in a particular place. What could happen here? Well, let's say that in one particular place there's some scar tissue. And so the pathway, the normal pathway, is now elongated in some places. And because the pathway is not going the way it normally goes, we could end up with a miscoordination, basically, of the signal. That's one way. Another way, maybe we saw the other day when we were looking at the calf preparation, there could be some mechanical situation where there's a mechanical artifact that's causing the cell to depolarize. There's a big enough depolarization that's out of sync with the normal depolarization coming down. There may also be a situation where there's a disruption of coronary blood flow in one region. And so now there's a metabolic problem that could come about, which could end up causing some cells to depolarize. So in this lady, here we have a lady on page 48. We have this lady on page 48. 60-year-old woman was admitted to the coronary intensive care unit with a diagnosis of acute myocardial infarction, heart attack. So soon after admission, she was resting comfortably and seemed to be doing well, except for occasional premature ventricular contraction. Her arterial blood pressure, central venous pressure. Where do I measure central venous pressure? In the vena cava, or that tells me about sometimes right atrial pressure will be called central venous pressure, essentially. And other vital signs were normal, except that her heart rate was moderately increased. On the second hospital day, the cardiac monitor showed the patient suddenly developed ventricular fibrillation. So in her case, there may have been some coronary flow problems, or there was scar tissue that was disrupting scar tissue, or dead area now, not necessarily scar tissue, dead area. It was altering path length significantly because of that. Well, because the coronary... Because she says, why would coronary blockage cause a problem? Coronary blockage will cause a problem because depending on where the blockage is, that portion of the ventricle is no longer getting oxygen and blood supply, and so it dies. That's why some friends of mine who were cardiovascular guys got really pissed at me when I had my heart attack because I let that happen, first of all. And then they were decided that I was an animal because of the original.
Can you have tissue death in the heart without a heart attack? If there's coronary blood.
Yeah, if it's small enough.
So it wouldn't cause a heart attack.
On the second hospital day, the cardiac monitor showed that the patient suddenly developed ventricular fibrillation. Her arterial blood pressure dropped precipitously. Precipitously. To about 8 millimeters of mercury, and her central venous pressure, which had been about 3 millimeters of mercury, rose to about 8 millimeters. Tell me what happened. Here's your mom. Tell me what happened. Tell me why this happened. And then tell me, what's magic about 8 milligrams of mercury? What was her blood pressure? What was her arterial blood pressure before that happened? Mean pressure. Wow. 100, okay. So, the mean is not together. Systolic. So let's say about 100 millimeters mercury, and then it stops, and then all of a sudden it drops to 8. Why did it drop? There's no movement of blood. Is that right? Is there no movement of blood?
Well, there's still some pressure, so there has to be some
shift. Pardon? Where is there no movement of blood? From the left ventricle
to the aorta.
Why would that happen? Because it's not a coherent or coordinated contraction. So all of a sudden, there's no flow that's coming into here. And what students tell me is that blood backs up in the system. Does that make sense? If I stop this pump, blood backs up. There's no pump. So pressure equalizes throughout the system. What causes pressure to equalize throughout the system? A gradient. Okay. Isn't that interesting? So now the pressure drops from 100 here. Think about that. It drops from a mean pressure of 100 down to 8. It drops 92 millimeters mercury. Right? And this pressure over here went from 3 millimeters of mercury to about 8. How in the hell did that happen? It doesn't make sense to me, because this is dropping right here. This pressure is dropping 90 millimeters of mercury, and this one's only going up by 5. And yet I'm putting all this blood in here into the system.
Because they can exactly extend.
There's more compliance in the vein.
Right.
A devil's in the details.
Bigger because the transmural pressure is
greater than zero.
is greater than zero.
All right, good job. Does that make sense?
No.
Why isn't it out of resting volume? Because there's not more like nothing.
It's not in its resting volume because it has, because the transpural pressure is greater than zero.
That's like a sun.
That's the definition.
That's
the
circular definition.
So if I, in order to get it to its resting volume, I would have to take volume out of the system. So resting volume as we define it. Resting volume as we define it is the volume of the system at which the transmural pressure is zero.
And it will never reach that.
Well, in this case, transmural pressure is the pressure difference across the wall. Inside my cell.
So, for I guess if there's blood in the system, we have more blood in our system, which is
well, generally, cardiovascular system is always distended to some extent. Now, that pressure, if you look at some books, that pressure that we just talked about, this 8 millimeters of mercury, is called the mean circulatory filling pressure. But it's all working. Because the guy who claimed that, who coined that term, it was made popular in the textbook, that killed the car accident.
Oh, man. He said, the guy who grew up. It's a race.
That's always based, it's also based on, I mean, part of that whole mean circulatory filling pressure business comes along with some baggage about how to think about systems in various ways that over the years has been lauded by some and condemned by others. We won't deal with it. Just dropped like that because the pump was no longer pumping. So nothing was entering here because the heart was fibrillated. Nothing was entering here, but there was a gradient from here to here. The flow was going to go along the gradient until what happened? No more gradient. And then the bottom pressure here and here the same.
So then that's what the reason is.
The reason for the drop in blood pressure is because at the moment that there's no pumping in, there is a gradient between the arteries and the veins, and blood will flow along the gradient until the gradient is gone. So you have a translocation of volume from this compartment to that compartment. And this is a more compliant compartment, so you don't see as much of an increase as you see the decrease over here.
Right.
Okay, we'll collect cards.